Well, I guess I can. The first thing I need to ask you, Oliver, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Really good. Thanks for having me on. No, everything's going well, and all is good in my part of the world.
And with the segment, which I'm focusing on those who are a part of the stand-up comedy industry, I guess I wanted to get a good insight into how you've made that choice to wanting to become a comedian. When did you have that idea initially on wanting to make people laugh?
I guess the initial idea to actually go into stand up, the truth, the real story is, Jared, that I was up at Wollongong, which is just near Sydney. I was there for uni. I went to Wollongong University, and I was coming home one night in the back of a cab, at about 3 or 4 a.m. after a big night out. Had a few drinks, as you do when you're at uni. And I saw a big banner for Wollongong Comedy Club. And I just thought, oh, I'm a stand-up fan. I like watching comedy. And then in my sort of, slightly drunken state, I was like, oh, I think my mum told me I was pretty funny once. I might try that. And went home, and by the time I got home, would have, been, as I said, 4 a.m. and looked up Wollongong Comedy Club, gave them a Google, and came up with the email address. And I just said, oh, do you offer any sort of open mic gig, or do you do anything like that for new people that want to try it for the first time? And luckily, the organizer of the show, the room runner, Stu, who I know really well now, he gave me my first spot. He sent me an email back the next day and said, here's three dates. Pick one. And I picked the furthest one from the date that he emailed to give me the most time to prepare. He said, yeah, come to this show and give me 5 minutes of stand up. And that was sort of, I did that. And then I had to write some jokes. And then that was the rest of history, I guess. And that's sort of how I started. But then if I really think about it, sort of back when I was younger and growing up, I guess without knowing it, I always tried to make people laugh, and sort of see the funny side of things, and I loved the joke. I didn't have a conscious decision that I wanted to be a comedian. So when I was like 10 years old, like I know there were some comedians out there, like I decided when I was a kid that I wanted to be a comedian. I think that's a kind of weird thing to want to do.
So,
So,
it wasn't like that for you.
I never really made a conscious decision to be a comedian. Like I said, mate, I made the decision when I was, somewhat intoxicated. So, if I never, I never like, and I have to think it is kind of weird that if you're a kid, like if there's kids out there, and like a 10-year-old kid that says, I want to be a comedian. I think that's a strange, weird thing to want to do. And I think for me, it kind of all happened. Like I obviously made a decision to go to inquire about the gig and to go to the gig to do it. But yeah, kind of was sort of a big happy accident in some ways.
Yeah, well, you were saying before that when you were growing up, you never kind of planned out what it was that you were going to do, let alone wanting to be a comedian, as your first choice of a career. To make that choice make that predetermined some selection of where it is you want to go, as an adult. But I also want to find out, who were your influences and role models within the comedy or stand-up comedy genre?
I guess by sort of being around the industry a bit now in Australia, especially now I live in Melbourne, so I sort of do more gigs, and I've been lucky enough to become friends with a lot of really good comedians. So like Dane Simpson, who's a guy based in Wagga, who Wagga's a town about an hour and a half from Albury, where I grew up. So I did a lot of, I've done a lot of gigs with Dane Simpson. So he's been a really big influence to me and just a really good friend and connection in the industry. I always liked, growing up, I liked Will Anderson, who's been, you know, doing comedy around Australia for over 20 years. So I used to watch the gala all the time, the Melbourne Comedy Festival gala, and guys like him and Dave Hughes were always on there. And I know I don't really like to admit this, Joe, but it took me quite a long time. I reckon I was 16 or 15 or 16 when I actually realised that you could be a comedian for like career and job. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I thought, but I just thought like guys like Will Anderson and Dave Hughes just showed up to the gala for the Melbourne Comedy Festival and did like 5 minutes a year and then went back to a normal job. I don't know what. And then I realised, oh no, these guys do this. It's their comedy is their career. And then they host TV shows or whatever they do. So yeah, I guess Will Anderson was always a funny one for me. Dave Hughes at different times. I'm a big AFL footy fan, so he was always around some of the footy shows I liked.
Did you ever watch some of the like variety shows on the ABC and Channel 10, like Good News Week and The Glass House?
So I do have sort of vague memories of The Glass House. No, vague memories of Good News Week. I was a bit, Glass House is a bit before my time.
Yeah.
So don't have a lot of.
I'm
27, mate. So just slightly before my sort of time of liking, of being into that sort of stuff.
I always felt like I was almost telling everyone my actual age, but no, I'm 36, turning 37. Yeah. This year. The Glass House was a, it was similar to Good News Week, but the format was, it deviated differently to what was done on that show. Like you had, I think you could call it like a political version of Spicks and Specks. But
I have memory of Spicks and Specks as well. I like Adam Hills. I like some of the British panel shows as well. No one in particular, but I just love the fact that the panel shows in that are so successful over there. I was saying that the other sort of influence and like exposure I had to comedy was Rove and his Rove Live show. That's where I sort of saw people like Dave Thornton do spots on there or Dave Hughes again. So just that's sort of my intro to stand-up.
Well, before I go, I just need to make a clarification here. What we were talking about before, The Glass House was a program that was on the ABC. It was on every Friday night, pretty late, I'll say probably about, God, I can't remember this. It's between 9:30 and or 10:30 on every Friday night, and you actually had Will Anderson, Dave Hughes, and Corinne Grant. She was a well-known comedian who worked her way through the trestles of the industry. I think these days she's now she's actually a lawyer, a barrister, but at the time she was a really funny, very quick-witted and very sharply tongued female comedian, and she was one of the main players on that program, and they used to bring in guests to go through like the news events of the past week, And I really, really enjoyed it. That was like my first exposure to, comedians who themselves started out probably going to comedy clubs or to performing in like the gala and going into like forging a career in being on television and making like a making trying to commodifying their skills and talents within their profession into making a living. But I actually wanted to, this actually goes into my next question, Oliver. Where did you get your start in when you said that you were going to proceed into wanting to become a comedian? Where did you do like any like training or were you like mentored by any well-known names in the industry?
No, mate, as I said at the start, I started in Wollongong and started around the open mic scene in Wollongong. Didn't really have any sort of, like, the guys at the time that ran the rooms in Wollongong, Stu, who's, we became good friends and still are. He, like, offered a little bit of guidance on how to do things. But yeah, just popped around Wollongong, did little gigs here and there, went to Sydney a little bit, like, when I could. Yeah, there was no sort of real guidance from anyone. It was just try and write some jokes and make people laugh and do whatever gig you could get. For me, there's always the issue even now with like access to gigs. Like, a lot of venues aren't wheelchair accessible, so you got to make it work. Find the ones that you can do and that can make it happen. But yeah, but I was lucky when I started, a lot of the venues in Wollongong were wheelchair accessible.
Oh, well, that actually was something else I was going to kind of go deeper into because I wanted to find out from you being a sit-down comedian. When you do go and book gigs and you go to perform at venues, do you ever have to kind of wrangle or even navigate through going to some venues where they might be inaccessible?
Oh, yeah, all the time, mate. So majority of the venues, like, aren't accessible. Like, I'd give, say, let's say there's 10 comedy rooms, 10 gigs. There'd be, so I'd say 7 of them would have some sort of access issue. So, yeah, you've always got to make it work, and think about it. So before I even ask for spots of whoever's running the gig or booking the gig, the first question I have to ask all the time is, what's your access like? And, the perfect, ideal scenario is it's a nice pub or bar, and they have, it's fully accessible with a toilet, accessible bathroom and ramps to get in and out or lifts or whatever's needed. But then there's you also, that's the ideal scenario, but then you also got to work backwards from there. And, like, example, I did a gig on Monday in Brunswick in Melbourne, and it was like one step up into the bar and then off the street, and then once you're in the bar, it's all flat, and then I could get up to the stage. But, like, that's not accessible. I just have to make that work. So this particular gig, I took a support worker with me to I use like I can pay with because of the NDIS. They come with me and they help me up the step with my chair, and then I was able to perform. But like that's the sort of thought process I have in terms of the access to gigs, because out of all the gigs in Melbourne, I've found sort of 4 or 5 that are in venues that are properly accessible,
Yeah, do
but
you ever have to,
discriminated against.
have you ever been in venues or at festivals where organisers or those who are managing your set or your show do have like a certain like they have some sort of they don't like working with people with disabilities. They might have like ableist attitudes or perceptions.
I haven't had someone, like, have any malice behind any of that or make a, you know, explicit comments and say, I don't want to work with you because of the disability. I've had people be very apologetic that they don't have, that their venue isn't accessible. Or, you know, whenever I meet new comedians around the Melbourne scene, they'll always look, oh, you can get on this gig, I'll get you on this gig, or I know this person. And then I ask them, I'm like, well, what's the access like? And then they realise that it's actually not accessible at all. So I've had people be very apologetic and all that sort of thing. But luckily I haven't had anyone openly say to me that I'm not booking you because of your disability. Sometimes, in many ways, it has opened extra doors for me in the industry because of the diversity and some organisers, you know, and festivals love it when they can promote a person with a disability as a performer. It's like similar, like Dane, who I mentioned before, you know, he's as an Indigenous man, he's Indigenous, and he's someone else that, and yeah, I also think whatever the diversity option is, we're both funny, so that should be always the first currency, but it's hard. I obviously have to deal with the other facts of the access. So I'm lucky I haven't had anyone openly discriminate against me, but yeah, you're always trying to fight through some of the barriers.
Mm. Well, it's good that a lot of people involved in that industry are very inclusive and very respectable towards any comedian who has a disability. And I'm glad that you're first-hand experiences haven't been malicious in any way. But I just want to find out, how has the audience themselves reacted when you're on stage?
I think sometimes, depending on the audience, they can be a bit sort of apprehensive because I do a lot of jokes about having a disability. So there has always been an element of, oh, can we laugh at this or is this okay? But I like to think in my, you know, delivery style and my personality that I can, you know, help make people feel comfortable and dispel any of those sort of apprehensions. But yeah, I've always had positive, you know, you're always going to have rough gigs, but people have, you know, if it's a good joke, people will laugh. So I have, sort of how I act. That's always my first port of call, mate, is right, try and have good jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're good jokes, you hope that the audience will laugh.
Yeah, that's pretty much the mantra that everyone likes to abide by. But I do, but what has been your most awful, terrible gig that you have performed?
I mean, there's a couple of rough ones. I'll tell you, one that was, I thought was going to be really bad, but ended up being really good. So I got booked to do this gig in Wollongong. It was part of the Relay for Life, one of the, you know, the cancer, the 24-hour, when people do laps around the oval or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So Stu in Wollongong said, oh, I've got a tent at Relay for Life in Wollongong, and we'll do a comedy gig. People will just come in and laugh while they're doing laps, and they can sit down while they're having a rest from the laps. They can sit down and watch comedy. So I said, oh, I'll do that. At that point, you can do any gig. So I get to the athletics track in a gazebo. People are sitting there in plastic chairs and camp chairs while they're doing laps for cancer. And we're telling jokes. And it's freezing cold. And this gig has no right to do well. This was meant to be the worst. We were meant to talk about this.
Yeah, the worst of the absolute worst.
Yeah, and it ended up, we had a good crowd of, you know, 15, 20 people, and it was a great gig. So I think that's the other great thing about stand-up is the stuff like that can surprise you, that, you know, a gig like that had no right to do well, and it did well. So, yeah. That's something I always think about.
Hmm. Well, this year you actually made your debut at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with your show On a Roll. And you and yes, you descri it's been described as well. I suppose you could say saying that you love cracking jokes, as you have told me throughout this interview. I just wanted to know, how was it being able to perform in front of a larger crowd of people, not just from those who are local or from interstate, but also those who are traveling to the festival from overseas?
Yeah, I had a great time, mate. It was fortunate enough to sell out the show, and yeah, it was a great experience. It felt really good to be able to know that I could put together an hour's worth of material and do my own show. Because before that, I'd only ever done like little spots here and there. Just like sort of my longest set before that was like 15 minutes. So yeah, no, I had a great time in it, and that sort of gave me a good sort of boost to say, okay, I just got to keep doing gigs, and if I can show up to the festivals, whether that be Melbourne or Adelaide, I'm keen to get over to Adelaide, where you are, mate, to do the Fringe next year,
Yes,
hopefully.
you need to come to the fringe. Yeah, we need to
So
see you
very,
there.
very keen to do that. So yeah, no, I love the festival experience, and keen for next year.
Did you get like any good reviews from the critics?
I didn't get a reviewer in, but who knows, mate? That might be next year. But I think everyone that was at the show, like, to me, the ultimate reviewer is the actual audience that pay their money to come watch you. And I got some really positive feedback from people on the way out of the show. They really enjoyed it. So that's always my main aim. Good to have the critic, the reviewers in, and the critics in, but the main critic is the audience in my book.
And my last question to you, Oliver, where do you see yourself career-wise in the next like decade? Do you see yourself breaking to the big leagues and getting to perform at some festivals like in other countries like the US and the UK?
Hopefully, that's always the aim, mate. I think you ask any sort of stand up. At my level, everyone's trying to break into that stuff. So everyone keep their eye out and their ears out and whatever they can keep out, because hopefully I can make it happen. But yeah, that would be the dream, to make comedy my full-time job. At the moment, it's just sort of a part-time thing that I'm just doing on the side. But if I could make that my full-time gig, that'd be the dream.
Well, I look forward to seeing you coming to the Adelaide Fringe next year, and to see, and I'll be able to decide, or I'll be able to assess myself if I enjoy your jokes or if I'm going to not really like them all that much. But it's going to be up to the
Okay.
individual themselves.
That's it. That's it. It's all very subjective.
Oh, yes, it is. That's how it all goes. But yeah, I really want to thank you, Oliver. It was great to have you as my guest for this season of Destigmatized.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, mate. Always a pleasure, and yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you again. And hopefully
No worries.
I'll get to talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, mate. Looking forward to it.